The following programming is sponsored by Don Beischel. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of this station, its management, or Beasley Media Group.
Hey, Uncle Sam, put your name at the top of his list. And the Statue of Liberty started shaking her fist. And an eagle will fly, and it's gonna be here when you hear my...
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Conservative Voice here on WWDB 860 AM. I'm Don Beischel, Jr., and welcome to our weekly conservative talk radio show. This portion of the show is brought to you by Fresh and Clean Cleaning Services in Levittown, Pennsylvania. And the number for Fresh and Clean is 215-949-0682. And if you need your carpets or your floors taken care of, Rick is your guy. I've personally known Rick for over 30 years, and he will do a fantastic job. And he does residential and commercial work. So again, the number is 215-949-0682. And we are joined today by the next governor of Pennsylvania, State Senator Douglas Mastriano. Senator, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Don. What a great event in Delco. You guys did some fantastic work. Great crowd, a lot of energy. Impressed Senator Rick Santorum, that's for sure.
Yeah, last night was a great event. We had a great diversity of speakers. Talking everything from moms to education to minority outreach. I mean, on and on it went. It was just a great all-around event. Just shows, I think, what that event showed last night, that we're seriously reaching out to just every aspect of the populace of the state of Pennsylvania.
Yeah, I agree. I was excited to be in the Southeast. You know, as Rebbe mentioned, that's where we actually met on the main line right outside of Philly there in college back a long time ago. But Senator Santorum offered his support some months ago. I'm like, okay, love to have you at a rally. He goes, let's do something in the Southeast. And you got the mission, and it was absolutely superb. You know, about 500 or so people on a school night, on a work night, yep. And the crowd was just fantastic.
I was, and plus, we found out right before we were scheduled to start that there were two major accidents on the highways, which was causing some people to get there late, but we accommodated and we got them in there. And I'll tell you, I have to be honest with you, I've gotten nothing but great reviews. I actually got a text message from the Montgomery County GOP chair, Liz Havey, who was not there last night, but she had friends that attended, and she said that they personally reached out to her to tell her how it was a great event, not just like from a political standpoint, but it was an event that it actually showcased that you are reaching out to people that, you know, traditionally the Republican Party hasn't kind of reached out to.
Yeah, I was impressed by the large Latino turnout and the enthusiastic support. And I really do believe the future of the Republican Party is with Latino population, who are now breaking 56-57% for us. So it's hopeful.
So one of the things that I do want to touch on today, because you've been getting attacked pretty steadily now by the teachers union in Pennsylvania. They had a rally yesterday in Council Rock, basically on a 1 o'clock on a Thursday afternoon. And I think they erroneously assumed that we would not have people to show up to refute them, because obviously it's a work day and we know most Republicans work. I was speaking to the Bucks County coordinator last night, Barry Casper, and he said that we had a good contingency of 75 to 100 supporters of yours there to refute these claims that they were making at this. And we just got notice of it like 10 o'clock that morning, yesterday morning.
Yeah, it's interesting that, you know, they swoop in, funded by taxpayer dollars. You know, let me lay it out for people who may not know. So we spend about $31 billion a year in Pennsylvania on education, and many of the workers within the school system are coerced to be part of the public school union, which in turn uses that money a lot of money, millions of dollars, to fund Democrat candidates. That's the real problem. That's a conflict of interest there. I think that's unconscionable. And that union, who's supposed to be serving the parents and the kids of the state, are out there spreading lies about my position in education. How do you deal with people like that?
I really don't know, because they are taking the hard-earned money of their supporters, many of whom, you know, the rank and file, support you. And then they take their money and they throw it into behind these Democratic candidates who don't reflect their views at all. And then they try to twist what you're trying to do into that you're anti-teacher and you're anti-child. I mean, and they lose fact that you just voted on increasing education spending in the state of Pennsylvania by $850 million, almost $1 billion in spending, you know, to improve education. So for somebody that's anti-education, you seem to be doing a lot of things for education.
That's the thing about these radical leftists in that union, is that they're never letting the facts get in the way of a good story. And that's exactly the problem. You know, instead of educating our kids for success, for a brighter future, they're too focused on gender confusion, pronouns, distracting our kids with the boys in the girls' bathroom. This is what the school union supports. I mean, they're too radical for Pennsylvania. And that anyone would believe an organization so deep in the pockets of the Democrat Party there, you need to give pause, because can you trust what they say? Can you consider that source? Are they reliable? The fact that, and I have a PhD, have taught from elementary level all the way up to post-grad at a master's level program, with all my academic awards and accolades, I understand the value of education. I understand it. Education needs to be focused on the essentials and not advancing a political agenda. And that public school union has failed the people of Pennsylvania. It's harmed the progress of our students. There's a new survey coming out here that shows that education in Pennsylvania, because of the shutdown, because of the masking requirements, all advanced and perpetuated by the school unions, by the way. You know, we wonder why last year, a year after the shutdown, Josh Shapiro rolled in about this time last year, as school boards and were finally loosening up all these ridiculous masking requirements for which there was never any scientific basis. The school unions leaned on him, and he brought a lawsuit. My opponent, Josh Shapiro, brought a lawsuit against every parent in this state demanding that masks happen again in the state. And, you know, the school union did this to the detriment of our students. Now we're showing that we have had a drop in our education skills and levels in Pennsylvania to a 1990 level. I mean, it's a magnificent, huge drop. It's terrible. And so how is the union serving and making education better? How are they serving the kids and parents of Pennsylvania? They're not. They're advancing a political agenda. And so their problem with me is, obviously, I stand for school choice. You know, Josh Shapiro, of course, wants school choice just for himself because he can afford it. It was ironic to watch Jake Tapper come to Shapiro's defense, no surprise, but apparently Tapper went to the same elite, exclusive, highly expensive, privileged school, one of the most privileged, expensive schools in the nation, by the way. And there we have Jake Tapper, you know, going to $30,000, $40,000 a year at levels today and saying, I'm not elitist. I'm like, Josh Shapiro can afford school choice. Most parents can't. And
right.
So that's their problem with me. I want to bring competition and transparency. I want parents in Philadelphia and Erie and everywhere in between to be able to pick the school they send their kids to. And guess what? The good teachers, the good administrations will keep their jobs. The good schools will grow and increase and become even more competitive. And the bad schools will have to work hard to compete. Right now, you're doomed to a bad zip code. Philadelphia, you guys, why do you support Democrat candidates? They roll out every 4 years, tell you the same old lies, and life gets worse. It's time for a change.
Well, so, Ed, and I do want to touch on a lot of that stuff, but to prove your point, there hasn't been a Republican mayor in the city of Philadelphia since 1952, and city council has been controlled by the Democrats since 1960. And we see exactly, you know, obviously for years we've seen the steady decline of Philadelphia, not only as a place where it's safe to walk the streets, but now we're talking about education. And we've seen the drop in educational output from the Philadelphia schools, And yet, and I say to people, I said, if you see this, you know, as President Trump said on that famous speech when he said, "What do you have to lose?" I mean, try something different. Try, you know, let's put the kids first instead of some political ideology. Okay, and I mean, and that's what this is all about. So one of the things that we've talked about before is that the per cost student in Pennsylvania is approximately $20,000, a little less, but let's just use a round number for sake of argument. So if we break that down to a dollar, I mean, I've seen different figures, but they're all bad. But anywhere from 66 cents to a 90 cents of that money goes somehow to some sort of either administrative cost or pension costs. So basically, around maybe 10 cents on a dollar or a little bit more goes to students for education. I mean, is that the numbers that you're looking at as well?
Yeah, I mean, obviously it varies from school district to school district, but right. But we're looking at only about a third of the it's actually about $21,000 now with our increase from July. So $21,000 per student, only about a third of that money actually makes it to the classroom.
Right. And that to me is disgusting, but it reflects the fallacy of their argument, you know, that first that you don't want to help fund the schools, but secondly, the Democrats' answer to everything is always throw money at it. And I think from an educational standpoint, from a parent standpoint, they might not be so concerned about putting their hard tax dollars if they were getting the educational results that they wanted. But it's obvious that that's not happening. And so when you're talking about school choice, you're looking at this from a multifaceted approach, because another one of your platforms is property tax reform. And a lot of people, you know, may or may not realize that a big chunk of the property taxes they pay goes towards school taxes. And so obviously, if you can eliminate a lot of the waste, bring that per cost student down, that would reduce school taxes, which of course would reduce property taxes. I mean, you know, it's all interconnected. So why don't we, you know, get into that a little bit?
Yeah, so it varies from township to borough, what have you, but about 50% or so of property taxes are school taxes. And that makes up the lion's share of the $31 billion now annually that Pennsylvania spends on education. There's many more sources, of course, for funding. It's not all just that. And so my vision for Pennsylvania is obviously the school union has failed us, because we're the 12th. And this is all 2020 report. This is all dated. I don't have a new report from the National Education Association at my disposal yet. But according to a 2020 NEA report, we were 12th highest in expense for public education in the nation of 50 states. At the time, we're 28th in quality output students. So here we are almost in the top 10 of expensive, but we're in the lower half of output. And now, because of the heavy-handed shutdown directed and pressured and pushed by the school unions, our kids will probably be in the 30 or 40th percentile now of 50, which is awful. So are you getting your money's worth? Are your kids getting the kind of education that's going to set them up for success? Or is it more consumed by, you know, picking pronouns and gender confusion and you know, critical race theory and, you know, advancing a far left wing, you know, hatred for America? This doesn't do anything to help the kids other than indoctrinate a generation. And so my focus here, if parents want to send their kids that sort of school, that's their choice. But right now they don't have a choice. And so I believe if we have school competition with school choice, that as a natural result of this competitive environment here, prices will come down because schools will have to compete. And I believe that will help lessen the pressure on property owners by driving down the expense as well. You know, so, you know, here's, of course, there are some dangers that we saw, of course, you know, in different states with this possibility, is that, of course, you could artificially increase the cost to go to private and public, you know, private school, religious school, you know, home, cyber school, you pick a school.
Right.
And so we have to obviously guard against that, but we do need an open market. And in the end, here's a fact. In the bluest of blue counties is Philadelphia. And once again, you know, as Don rightly said, why do you keep on voting for failed politicians and failed policies that are leaving your kids behind, that are putting your babies at risk, that you're in a fire zone and crossfire downtown Philadelphia, and that drugs are running rampant and drug dealers are walking free? Why are you continually, you know, voting for policies that are failing? It's time for a change, Philadelphia, and Mastriano is going to bring that change to you. He's not a part of the problem. He's going to be part of the solution, unlike my opponent, who's completely in the pockets of the school union and doesn't care about the people. He doesn't care about crime. He's turned his back on you. Philadelphia, it's time to wake up. And so my vision for Pennsylvania, of course, here is to give the parents the choice. And so one reason why I was a yes vote on this massive increase of education spending this past July was within that $850 million was a significant increase of education scholarships, which would go to the families in some of the worst school districts in the state, mostly in Philadelphia, and you know, help those parents actually get out of that broken mold there and have their kids to have a brighter future.
Well, And what I will say to people is, if you have a doubt about this, first of all, you know, you can take Senator Mastriano's word on this. You could take my word on it. But there's also a fantastic book out there, and I've talked about it many times on the show. It's written by Thomas Sowell, who is one of leading economists. But he wrote this book. It was called The Charter Schools and Their Enemies. And what's interesting about this book, and this backs up exactly what Senator Mastriano was saying, so I would suggest, if you have a question, if you're really interested in finding out the truth, get this book. And from an economic standpoint, he breaks it down into statistics. And he used the city of New York, because they do their charter schools actually inside the public school buildings. So they're drawing from the same student pool as the public schools. And the educational results of the charter schools students that are taught by the charter school teachers are significantly higher than those being taught by the public schools teachers. And it's because of, as you said, the competitive nature of it. So there is no, you know, the affluent getting to pick their kids. They pull from the same demographic as the public schools, but they're taught in the same buildings, in the same neighborhoods, and yet statistically the private school, if you want to call it private school, but charter school students are doing better than the public school students. So there is a apples-to-apples comparison for you. So I suggest you get that book. It's called Charter Schools and Their Enemies by Thomas Sowell. But it proves Senator Mastriano's point. You know, it's not just his opinion. This is actual facts. And as the senator likes to say, facts are stubborn things. So let's segue a little bit into that. So obviously we touched on property taxes. And one of the things that is the big one of your big talking points is that you want to protect senior citizens from losing their homes because of their inability to pay property taxes. So obviously, attacking these bloated school budgets would help on that respect. But what's your plan? I mean, I know you have a day one plan, but I also know you've also considered a long term plan on property taxes to help out our senior citizen population.
And sadly, the addressing property taxes, that's going to be a longer problem to tackle, because, as you rightly said, first off, we have to come to terms with an education system that is inherently flawed, being that, you know, $21,000 annually, you know, per student, only about $7,000 makes it to the classroom. And this is why our teachers, the good teachers, have to go out and buy supplies. You would think in Pennsylvania they have everything they need, but there's, you know, abundance of layers of bureaucracy. There's the school union, that then obviously they're rich, they're living a very good life as well, the leaders of that group there, so they have time to drive around the state and perpetuate lies and disinformation. But so, of course, we had the property tax reform bill, Senate bill, and House Bill 76. That simply took the existing property taxes, and instead of putting on property owners, it increased the sales tax and income tax. You know, that's one way to address it. I did support 76. I'm not real thrilled with that, because it takes a problem and just spreads it out elsewhere where we're paying for it in sales tax and income tax. And so my hope is, by bringing school choice in, that will naturally drive down the the cost of education in various school districts across the state, which will have then a driving down effect on property taxes in various counties. And then we'd have to deal with the terms whether we completely get rid of property tax or not. I think it has to go. I believe it's unfair that the burden for school taxes falls on only those that own, a house or land. And we've done research on this. This is, my office's own research. And we asked a lot of the bureaus in Harrisburg for help on this. And we asked how many homes a year are being lost because of failure to pay property taxes. And apparently we were told how it works is that if you're delinquent after 2 years, the sheriff will come in and your house is sold for pennies on a dollar. And what we came to find out is about 10,000 on average a year, homes lost. And most of those are elderly people who can't make ends meet. Now, this is before Bidenflation. This is before COVID. This is before the shutdown and destruction of people's livelihoods. So I can't imagine that the problem's gotten any better these days. So we do need to attack that one pretty hard.
Now, I understand that you had talked. I know we've talked about this before. You have a kind of a immediate protection for a certain segment of the senior population that you were looking into to see if it was feasible. Are you still trying to go down that road for a certain amount of the senior population to give them some kind of instantaneous protection at a certain income level?
I do, and obviously this will require a bill being passed out of the House and Senate. I can't operate on
right.
executive work by this, but
well, I know you're not. You're not like King Thomas Wolfe the First and Little Josh, where you just decide by the stroke of a pen you're going to do what you want to do. So
let me lay out. So proponents of eliminating property tax. Some of the folks out there are violently opposed to this. They're like, Doug, it's all or nothing, and I think that's ridiculous, cruel, heartless statement to make.
Yes,
because I want to step in now and stop elderly from losing their homes. And so I have a bill that says if you have lived in Pennsylvania for 10 years or more, and that you're 65 or older, and you make a certain threshold or less of income, that you should be exempt from property taxes from the get-go.
And I think that would be at least give some protection to those that are the most vulnerable. And that's really I say to people, it's funny, property taxes are like you're paying rent in perpetuity for property that you've owned. And a lot of these senior citizens have paid off their house, but yet they're still paying, quote unquote, rent on their property. And you rightly brought it out. Even though the president likes to say that, inflation is under control and we have the Inflation Control Act and we have this and we have that. The cost of food is through the roof. I can't imagine, in Pennsylvania what the cost of heating oil is going to be in the wintertime. And then, of course, we go down the property tax route and medication and so forth and so on. And then, of course, these poor people have to come up with these property tax numbers that they just can't come up with.
So you're retired. You're on a fixed income. You have your retirement check, maybe Social Security coming in. That's fixed. I mean, that's
right.
Not going up. And now we're told, and this is lowball. This is from Penn Live. So obviously, they give their buddies on the left the benefit of the doubt. They do. They say it costs about $3,000 to $5,000 more a year to live in Pennsylvania because of inflation this year alone at the same level you lived last year. How do you do that when you're on a fixed income? And so what gives? Property tax? You're gonna pay that $5,000 to $8,000 bill or whatever it is, or are you gonna buy food and medicine? I mean, the choice is pretty clear how it goes, but in the end, our elderly suffer.
Yeah, exactly right. So I want to switch gears a little bit because another thing that you've been talking about quite hot and heavy is energy production in Pennsylvania and how that will not only affect our economy but the job situation in Pennsylvania as well. And part of your plan, and we were actually talking about this last night after the rally, we had a little meeting with some of the county coordinators and so forth and so on. And when we were talking about this, is part of that plan is to do something with the ports in Philadelphia and Erie, which, of course, would create more high-paying jobs. Well, let's go over the energy plan, how you plan on increasing natural gas production, easing energy costs for the people of Pennsylvania, and then, of course, exporting, which would bring revenue into the state, which, of course, could help lower taxes.
imagine that.
Yeah.
A world in Pennsylvania where we are the number one energy producer in the nation, as we were about a century ago, and that prosperity and money, opportunities, high-paying jobs are flowing into the state. And, you know, imagine that.
Yeah. I think John Lennon wrote that song, Imagine.
We could borrow that song. There.
Yes.
It's inconceivable.
Yeah, Stan just came
What's
in.
What's up,
so.
Brother?
As soon as you said that last night, I started laughing. I had the image of what's-his-name doing. This is inconceivable. A lot of it's inconceivable what's going on. Before you get into that energy, I just want to say one of the things that impressed me so much, I've never actually seen this before in almost any campaign, was Rebbe and her taking the mic and talking about issues in just the most laid back, but you can feel the passion in it. And I've never seen Tom Wolf's wife do anything. I haven't seen Josh Shapiro's wife do any of that. I haven't even seen Fetterman's wife do any of this. And I'm thinking, I mean, you get the whole team with you and Rebbe, people who passionately care about people and the issues. So you must communicate to Rebbe. I sat there and I said to people around, I've never seen this before. She was unbelievable. She really was. I can see why you're so good. It's really her.
Yeah, I mean, and you guys know the old story, you know, when we won the Senate special election and we were summoned to Harrisburg and we were being grilled with all the political questions by the career politicians. And then it came down to, you know, who was your campaign manager? And I said, Rebbe. they all looked over to here disapprovingly and they said to Rebbe, well, what are your qualifications of being a campaign manager? And without batting an eye, he said, I'm an Army wife. I'm like, oh yeah.
That's the only qualification I think you should have to have, you know. I mean, you know, our military spouses, whether male or female, they're the ones that keep the things going at home. I mean, you know, so you know, they're you know, husband, wife, economist for the family, school teacher, parent. I mean, you know, let's we could go down the list, but so let's get back to the energy thing. Yeah, because I think that's important for the people of Pennsylvania to know exactly how you plan on bringing Pennsylvania back from the abyss that Tom Wolf and Josh Shapiro have put us in.
So, I mean, and what's the so what? Because obviously there's not energy resources coming out of the ground in the eastern half of the state. But the western half of the state is just rich with coal and oil and natural gas. And we're doing it in ways that's environmentally friendly. No one wants to poison the streams and kill the trout. You know, we obviously.
Well, you're an old Eagle Scout, so I know how important the environment is to you.
Yeah, truly. And so my goal here is on day one, we're going to be out of this carbon tax scheme that Tom Wolf has signed us up to. And although, yes, that's caught up in court right now, it has not stopped energy prices going up. In anticipation of entering this regional greenhouse gas carbon tax, the energy sector increased the costs for our energy on the 1st of June by 40%. So it almost doubled because of that. And my goal is on day one, regardless of where we are on this carbon tax, on day one, 17 January, we're out of it. And that you should see in the dead of winter then a pretty quick drop in your energy costs. And number two is, of course, opening up state lands. Number three is rolling back regulations. Number four is speeding up the permitting process, because for our energy sector to succeed, they need permits approved out of DEP and other agencies. And it takes, you know, 1 to 2 years for action on these. And this is just a bureaucratic nightmare. And it's driving businesses out of our state and into West Virginia and Texas. We had a U.S. steel plant, $1 billion-a-year plant, that was going to open up in the Southwest outside of Pittsburgh. They left because of a 2-year permitting process. They went elsewhere.
Right.
This is ridiculous. We got to really be open for business. So we're going to open up the lands, open up our energy sector here, and produce our energy so it drive down prices and help even inflation.
Well, and the one thing that I think you touched on, so yes, all the extracting of these natural resources will occur in the western part of the state, central part of the state. But that doesn't mean the eastern part of the state is left out, because the eastern part of the state has a lot of the distribution facilities already in place or ready to go. And so your plan encompasses the whole state, not just a certain sector.
Yeah, that's right. So if you live in the eastern part of the state, not Philly, you'll benefit from this because obviously revenues will come in, tax revenues and businesses and jobs, high-paying jobs. And that will improve overall the opportunities within Pennsylvania. And then, of course, you have the support sector. There will be hundreds of thousands of jobs opening up that will encompass the entire state. Now, as far as moving this energy out of Pennsylvania, and I've been in talks with the energy sector, and so my goal is to get a modernized pipeline into Philly, have a modernized liquefied natural gas terminal off of Philly, and that way we can export hopefully billions of dollars worth of natural gas to other states, like in New England, or to our allies in Europe to get them off of Russian oil and gas. Could you imagine if we had that export facility now, how much money would be coming in? Because we could be a net exporter to Lithuania and Poland and all the other countries in Central and Eastern Europe here that are too much on Russian oil and gas.
Well, I'd like people to know that in Alaska, even though there's a lot less people in Alaska, but their energy price, their energy sources of income for that state, really, those people have almost zero taxes up there. In fact, I think they get a rebate. I think they get a rebate each year from the state because they are part of the success. Now, granted, it's not going to be to that extent, but I really envision this happening in Pennsylvania where there's a tremendous reduction in our taxes because of that. So I'm very excited, especially when you talked about that pipeline. Oh, my God, unbelievable.
And also, I have my eye on a pipeline into Lake Erie off of the city of Erie. That will take a bit more time because they lack the infrastructure, of course, that Philly already has in place.
Right. Well, the nice thing, though, but having that plan in place gives the folks in Erie at least some hope that, you know, because I think for too long, certain areas of the state feel that Harrisburg kind of forgets about them, so to speak. And so, go ahead.
That's true.
Yeah.
You know, Harrisburg forgets about a lot of people.
Yes. They sure do. And that's going to end on the Mastriano, that's for sure. And that's why, in part, you're seeing us, Revy and I, going to all 67 counties.
Right.
It's a lot of work, but we have. And we're going to knock that out in the next couple of weeks. And the key thing is every county matters. Whether you're in Philadelphia or Elk County, Mastriano is going to be counted on to look out for you and our state.
Well, everything, whether it's energy production or and I know you have to jump off shortly, but everything matters in, you know, as far as the economy. And so not only energy production, but you're also a big proponent and supporter of the agricultural industry in Pennsylvania, which makes up a huge chunk of the state's economy.
Yeah, it is a vast sector of our state. We are a breadbasket for the United States of Pennsylvania. Our dairy farmers are really struggling because of overregulation. And as well, our regular farmers are having trouble because of, you know, the cost of diesel, the lack of available fertilizer because of this problem in, you know, with Russia, and you know, on and on. So I met one farmer up in the Northeast, and he's got a good old farm, but he's now has to on the side scrap metal to have enough money to keep the farm going. I mean, this is ridiculous. We got to seriously roll back these regulations and get the bureaucrats off the backs of our farmers.
Do you know how many electric tractors there are out there? I'm just saying. I mean, I envision all these electric cords going across the field running these tractors. It's going to be a little bit hard. You mentioned.
I think there's like probably zero.
I think so too. One of the two things you mentioned last night that really struck me, and that was when you'd get a Secretary of Education. The person will be truly a Secretary of Education. When you get somebody running for the Attorney General, you're going to get people that really understand crime, understand what happens with these criminals that are on the streets and keep on going back on the streets, how that affects. And I'd like to touch because you were in the military, you understand the importance of having the right people in the right spot, because if you didn't, men died, women died, your men would die. So you have it in your heart how to make sure you get the right people.
Well, yeah, and obviously, Stan, I think one of the first qualifications would be that and that an attorney general that's actually been into a courtroom.
Yeah, and actually tried a case.
Absolutely.
So you might want to touch a little bit on your how you measure people in that way.
And what we've seen is with the Wolf administration, almost to a fault, is he brings in people. It looks like to me political payback. He brings in people that are incompetent, who aren't proficient in the jobs, who don't know what they're doing, have no experience in that field. And so I have a very ambitious agenda for Pennsylvania. That's not going away. And so I need a team of secretaries around me that share that vision, that are competent, and are going to make the job happen. So I'm on day one, 17 January, we'll have the inauguration. Then we'll meet with all my appointees. They'll have to be approved by the Senate. And I'll give them guidance, and they need to go out and make it happen. I mean, there's no time for games. So, you know, the Secretary of State needs to be somebody who's competent and understands how elections run and how elections can be run in Pennsylvania without questions of fraud and abuse. We need somebody running the Department of Environmental Protection who aren't radicals with a far-left agenda, but somebody who actually knows how to balance protecting our environment and still being able to develop our energy resources and run businesses. And so...
In other words, common sense.
Yeah.
Well, I bet whoever you pick for Secretary of Education will be able to answer the question, how many students there are in Pennsylvania. So, I mean, you know, just kind of the basics, you know. So, Senator, I want to thank you. I know you said you had to jump off at 12:30, so I'm glad you stayed on for a little bit extra. But thank you for being with us this week, and we'll be looking forward to talking to you again.
And our sleeves, Don and our sleeves, are rolled up.
And ready to go.
Ready to go. I'm getting all my sleep now because I know in January there's going to be no sleep because we're turning this thing around.
Yes.
Yeah. See some breaking news. Just received Trafalgar's poll. Trafalgar just released their poll. They oversampled Democrats by 4 points, and it shows Shapiro and me only a 2-point separation. I think we're doing fantastic.
As I say, when they send these polls out, and we're that close, that actually means we're winning. So,
well, you know, Senator or Governor, just remember I was the first one to use that term. When you mentioned that last night when I saw Revy talk, they were looking right at me. And I go, did I cause all this? I don't know. But anyhow, real quick before you run, I saw this story and I thought it was so funny. And it says, you know, conservatives and Republicans today are a lot like the Jewish people in Egypt. When the angel of death passed over them, they put blood on their lintel. Well, more and more, so don't worry about the signs. They're people who are conservatives and everything else. So the FBI passes over them and the DOJ that are putting Biden signs on their lawn. So just want to let you know that could be that's happening. So our Passover is Biden signs on our lawn, so the FBI misses us.
All right, Senator, thank you very much. You have a great weekend, and we'll see you on the campaign trail.
Give our love to Rebbie too,
yes, please.
She's great.
I will.
Okay, great. We're gonna take a short break, and when we come back, we're gonna be talking to Charlie Giroux.
Charlie Giroux.
He's a great guy. He did a great speech last night.
Oh,
but
my
we're
God.
Gonna talk about some stuff with Charlie. So
I was dreaming about him last night.
You guys have it. Well, we'll be right back after this short break. Hi, this is Don from the Conservative Voice. Are you looking for new business cards? Need new menus for your restaurant? Signs old and outdated? Employees need new shirts? Cars, trucks, and vans need new signage? Look no further than Mann Custom Wear. Located at 2250 State Road in Bensalem, Pennsylvania, Mann Custom Wear can fill all those needs and much more. At Mann Custom Wear, the owner, Mark, takes great pride in providing his customers with a superior product that is sure to catch the eye of potential customers and wow your existing clients. So if you're looking for a change, if you're looking to increase business and visibility, reach out to Mark at Mann Custom Wear. He can be reached at 215-651-8932. By email at markcolt45@hotmail.com or on the web at www.mancustomware.com. Mann Custom Wear, your one-stop shop for all your design and printing needs.
Hey, Uncle Sam, put your name at the top of his list. And the Statue of Liberty started shaking her fist. And the eagle will fly.
And welcome back to the Conservative Voice here on WWDB. I'm Don Beichel Jr. here with Stan Casaccio. So our next guest is someone that is no stranger to Pennsylvania politics or politics in general, and he gave a great speech last night at our Delco rally.
I wanted to catch his tie. I needed that tie bad.
I felt we should raffle it off. We could raise
what were you thinking? That was worth money. It touched your hands. It even had spaghetti sauce on it.
I'm going to give the tie story, Charlie, if you don't mind. So me and Charlie were talking.
This could take an hour.
Not really. We were talking before the event, and Charlie said, "Well, how do I dress?" He said, "Well, it's business casual." I said, "But I'm going to wear a tie." And Charlie said, "Well, I don't know if I should wear a tie because Dave White never wears a tie." So I said to myself, "Well, I'm not going to wear a tie then either, you know, right?" So me and Charlie both don't come with a tie. And who's wearing a tie? But Dave White. You know, he never wears a tie. So, you know, of course, Charlie convinced Dave to take his tie off so we could all match, you know. But so that was the tie story. So Charlie, welcome to the show, my friend.
Great to be on with you. I had one just in case. And I'll tell you what, Don, if you find a venue where you can auction off one of my ties, I'll be sure to give you one.
We're going to set that up.
I think it could be a whole new approach to politics, you know, the tie-raising ceremony.
And those people were fighting over that tie. I thought it was a foul ball going into the stands.
I saw that. I was really honored. They were fighting over the tie.
I'm going, it's just Charlie Giroux's tie with spaghetti sauce on it. Why are you fighting over it for?
So Charlie, one of the reasons I wanted you to come on today after the senator is because you've been in this game a while. And so I wanted to get your opinion on how you see the Mastriano campaign in how it's progressing, how it's grown, and compare it, I mean, obviously, to Reagan and Trump and other of our great leaders. But I mean, what's your take on how this is all coming about?
Well, first of all, every Republican who runs for governor or any other statewide office in Pennsylvania, Don and Stan, runs at a disadvantage. We have a 500,000 vote plurality for the Democrats by registration alone. It used to be bigger than that. It's coming down a little bit. So when you're, quote unquote, behind in the polls at this stage of the game, as long as it's not, you know, 15 or 20 points, you're in pretty good shape.
Right.
So if you're within the margin of error, as the Mastriano campaign is, I'd say you're in really, really good shape. So, you know, as the issues become to the fore in a big way, I think the downside is much bigger for Josh Shapiro than it is for Doug Mastriano. As I said last night, you know, the media has aggressively gone after everything that Senator Mastriano has ever done, picking the fly poop out of the pepper as they go. And they haven't laid a hand on Josh Shapiro. And there is a lot to be discussed with the background of Josh Shapiro that is very, very negative. And if you look at the results of elections past, Don and Stan, you know, Josh Shapiro has never performed in anywhere near the way that the media would like to portray him. He was able to beat two, let's just say politely, lackluster Republican candidates for attorney general, but only did so by a very small margin. So I'm very, very optimistic about the Mastriano campaign. You saw last night the energy and enthusiasm that surrounds his campaign. Josh Shapiro could only wish to have that.
It's definitely a movement, and one of the reasons why Josh is going to lose is that he always wears a tie.
Well, Charlie, let's touch on that a little bit. So one of the things that I've noticed is that while the Mastriano campaign has focused mainly on the issues and has stayed positive, Josh's campaign started off negative. They were hitting Doug hard, and obviously that wasn't producing the results. So as an old campaign dog like you are, I've noticed that now Josh has shifted his ads on some of his ads where he's trying to make him portray himself out as this hero of certain segments of the population, like the one ad I saw where the guy said that his employer was stealing his pension money and Josh saved him. And there has been a shift. And I noted,
how about the state stealing all our money?
Right. Well, one of the things I noticed, though, is in a campaign, when you shift like that, that means that you're aware that what you were trying to do wasn't working. And, you know, I mean, do you see the same observation that I do?
I do. And I mean, clearly their initial media buy was not helpful to their campaign, didn't really work for them. And now they're trying to shift strategies. And, you know, there's enough time for that to work to a certain extent. But you've got to remember that for all the vaunted financial advantage that Josh Shapiro has, and he does have more money than the Mastriano campaign because he's been politicking all of his life and accumulating a war chest through the years, he's wasted a lot of that money. I mean, he spent money promoting Doug Mastriano through the primary. And I think a lot of people, you know, it's the old be careful of what you wish for. You just might get it.
Well, it's funny. We were talking about that it's similar to when Hillary wanted Trump. You know, she kept saying, if I get Trump, I'm going to win. I'm going to da-da-da-da. You know, it's like you said, be careful what you wish for. And I think that as we like to affectionately call him, I think little Josh is finding out that you know, maybe what you wish for isn't exactly what you wanted to have happen.
Charlie, let me just jump in for a minute. But where it really is different is when you are giving the same talking points and you've got this inflation that you're a party that supports inflation, that supports men playing in women's sports, who supports the teachers union, whatever they want, let's give it to them. There's very difficult for them to get a movement started on that. That's what happened with Hillary. There was no movement. People were just there by rote, and people are there just by rote with Josh Shapiro. But yet from day one, Don and I have been involved with Doug for a long time. He has a movement. There's a connection between him and his wife and the people. We saw that back in many of the events when he announced. I mean, that room was packed. There were people of all shapes, all sizes, all colors, all religion. They were passionately for this man. I don't see that same passion for any of the for people who are doing this by the road type of thing and supporting this. Shapiro has come out with nothing that he's ever done to stop crime, stop inflation, stop high gas prices or anything like that. There's no passion on his campaign.
Well, you see Josh Shapiro, you know, really following his own ambitions rather than the hopes, dreams, and ambitions of his fellow Pennsylvanians. And I think that's the big difference in this
great
campaign.
Point.
Doug
great
Mastriano
point,
speaks for the people. Josh Shapiro speaks for himself. He's a professional politician who's been campaigning for office after office after office all his life, never finishing a job he asked the taxpayers for. And as you know, if he gets elected, God forbid, as governor, he's going to be off and running for president the minute that he takes office. And that's really a scary thought, because the only way you run for president in the Democrat Party these days is to the far, 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 far left.
Far, yes, the AOC left.
Yes.
So, Charlie, the other thing I wanted to ask you about, because, again, I asked you to come on to give your opinion and observations. So one of the things that the campaign is doing, which I'm very happy about, is they are running more of a positive issue-oriented campaign. In other words, we're not doing the attack ads. We're not vilifying, Josh for his Facebook posts or stuff like that. I mean, we are talking about facts and compare and contrast, which is fodder, you know, which is fair. But I've noticed that, in your opinion, do you think that the tide has shifted, that people are more interested in the candidate telling us what they are going to do instead of what's wrong with the other candidate?
Yeah, I mean, I think people ultimately want to know, what will you do as governor? What will you do that will make my life better, my family's future brighter, and help us fulfill our dreams and accomplish our goals? That's what they really want to know, not what's the dirt under the fingernails of my opponent.
Right. And I noticed when you were part of the primary process, that's kind of the same approach you took. That.
Totally. Totally.
Yeah. Yeah. And I it's just my observation is that I think the difference is between Doug and the normal playbook, so to speak, is that he's focusing solely on, you know, how can I make your life better from an economic standpoint, an educational standpoint, a crime, you know, safety standpoint. You know, those are the things, you know, that people are interested in.
He's doing what he did as a colonel. He protected his people.
Yeah.
And he wants to protect the citizens. He is gifted around serving people in a true sense in every level. So it's really important. I think the other thing that really bothers me, and I give you a lot of credit for that, and for Dave White also, you fought the hard campaign, and yet at the end of the day, we are coming together because we know how critical this election is. And I think you touched on that last night a little bit about everybody knows that every campaign, every election is the most important that happens. But this is something different, completely different.
This one really is.
This is so different.
We're in a battle for the heart and soul of our country, and we all recognize that. And as I said last night, those battle lines come right through Pennsylvania this year, and there has never been in my few years, and I've got more gray hairs than the other candidates, there's never been as sharp a contrast and as clear a distinction between the two gubernatorial candidates as there is between Doug Mastriano and Josh Shapiro. And bluntly, Josh Shapiro doesn't have anything to sell other than his own personal ambition and his political machinery and apparatus, whereas Doug Mastriano has a story to tell about fighting for the people of Pennsylvania, which he's very effectively done for the past number of years. And prior to that, fought for us, protecting our freedoms as someone who wore the cloth of this country.
Now, Charlie, one of the things I want to touch on, so obviously as a member of the Latino community yourself, which, I mean, a lot of people probably don't realize that you're part of the Latino community.
They don't.
Yeah, but you are, and you're
people
in touch.
You are?
Yeah, and I know you're in touch with them. You communicate with a lot of the Latino community leaders and stuff like that. And one of the things that the Mastriano campaign has made it an effort to is to reach out to that very community. In fact, Doug talked about it when he was on the air before, that it's the most growing part of the Republican Party that there is, which, you know, I'm sure is to the chagrin of the Democrats.
They throw them out of Martha's Vineyard.
Yeah. can you touch on that a little bit and what you're seeing?
I'm really, really thrilled to see the Mastriano campaign do what it's doing within and with the Latino community. And there is tremendous support for him and his candidacy among Latinos across the state. A, the fastest growing demographic in the country, and B, certainly the fastest growing for Republicans. And if you've noticed the recent polling about Joe Biden, the group that he is underwater with the deepest is not affluent whites or middle-class whites. It's the Latino community. They really have rejected the Biden administration. And Josh Shapiro is tied to the hip with Tom Wolf and Joe Biden and the rest of the Democrat apparatus that he's supported and been a part of.
And to touch on that a little bit, because I just want you to say, because I've actually spoken to some of these community leaders, What are some of the attributes that the Latino community has embraced about the Mastriano campaign?
Well, a couple of things. The Latino community, as you know, Don, is very family oriented and very family values oriented. They're pro-life. But beyond the human issues, the economic issues really are where the rubber meets the road for Latinos. They tend to be very entrepreneurial. They are, as a people, very, very hardworking. They want to keep more of what they earn. They want to make the decisions for how their hard-earned dollars are spent by themselves rather than having some politician in Harrisburg or bureaucrat following behind them making those decisions for them. So that's where I think Senator Mastriano has made tremendous strides within the Latino community and, as he has with others, by simply reaching out to them and spending time with them, which most candidates don't do.
Well, that's one of the complaints I heard from a lot of the Philadelphia community. For example, a group of African American pastors had reached out to us, and Doug actually met with them. And of course, the biggest complaint that we always hear is that, you know, the Republicans never reach out to them, they never talk to them, they never discuss things with them, and all these communities. In the minority community, they all have, you know, the things that are important to them. And obviously, as you touched on it, which is important, they're worried about the safety aspect of it. They're worried about the educational aspect of it and the economy aspect of it. The social issue part of it, I'm not going to say it doesn't play in, but it's probably not one of the top
three issues for the minority community when they can't walk outside their door without getting shot or their kids go to school and get hit with fentanyl.
Well said. And I mean, the whole issue of education choice comes into play. The Latino community very, very strongly in favor of school choice. Josh Shapiro, because he has taken an awful lot of his direction from the teachers union, is opposed to school choice and has done things to try to hinder the development of real opportunity choices for the minority community. And folks remember.
Yep, absolutely correct. So, Charlie, you've been, like I said, I hate to keep saying this, but you've been around. And so
I've been around.
Yes. How do you see this playing out? I mean, you've been involved with obviously, you know, the Ronald Reagan, who, you know, was a fantastic president. And then, of course, you've been through the Trump years. But you've had a lot of candidates between.
CPAC.
Yeah, CPAC. You know, you're involved with CPAC. You've seen a lot of candidates, and you've seen a lot of the, you know, issues and guys trying to play both sides of the fence and so forth and so on. What do you think resonates the most with people? The candidates that are wishy-washy or the candidates that stick to their convictions and you know, are able to articulate those convictions where people can understand where they're coming from?
Well, back in the days when I was working for Ronald Reagan, he said, we want a banner of bold colors, not pale pastels.
Right.
And I think that's as true today as it's ever been. People want straight shooters. They want authenticity. They want honesty. They don't want a lot of political BS. And they know it instantly and, you know, instinctively when they hear it and they reject it. And I think that's why the Shapiro campaign is in trouble.
Yep. Well, thank you, Charlie. We're up against the time, but I want to thank you for calling in. It was a great speech last night.
Thank you.
More ties.
Bring more ties.
Next Friday, we're going to be on the Capitol steps in Harrisburg, PA, if anybody can join us at a unity rally.
Fantastic.
What time is that?
What time, Charlie? I guess we lost him. Okay, well, thanks, everybody, for listening to Conservative Voice, and stay tuned for the Don't Back Down show coming up next.